thank you all for coming out this morning and for allowing us to present our research. As mentioned, I've been practicing for 20 years, which means that when I was a resident, we were recommending the stomach as the safest sleep position. And so even as healthcare providers, to have to go through a change in messaging is difficult and challenging, but at least it gives me a little bit of clout. So when I talk to grandmothers, I can say, yeah, you know, when you had a baby, we used to recommend the stomach as the safest position, but now we have more evidence and data to show that the back is the safest position. So we do change our minds. It does impact credibility of healthcare provider messaging. But I think that that's all we can do is provide advice, and then people are going to do what they want to do when they go home anyway. We all know that. But I think with more experience, people can couch their messages so that they don't sound so dictatorial in delivering them. So I do want to give credit where credit is due. This was a project that was led by medical students who couldn't be here today, and I want to acknowledge two who did like gazillions of these surveys by phone in between patients. Radha Sadkaran, who is currently a medical student, is going to be working with me to write this up. Lauren Daly, and then we also have nurse partners, so nurses in the postpartum area who helped us to access information so that we could contact the mothers. So this really was multidisciplinary, but led by trainees. Today I'm going to talk to you about safe sleep practices and sudden infant death syndrome risk reduction knowledge among new mothers. And unlike Martine's research, this really focuses on mothers of infants, so newborns, in the first 2 to 4 weeks. So their practices may be a little bit different because they haven't had time to change them. And we have no relationships to disclose. So as you know, sudden infant death syndrome is a leading cause of infant death beyond the neonatal period. In October of 2010 in Pennsylvania, a law was passed, the Safe Sleep Bill, which requires that all birthing facilities provide written materials on SIDS risk reduction. And this comes sort of with a slew of other mandates coming down from our state legislature. For example, we had a shaken baby mandate where all birthing hospitals had to teach. And so the nurses feel overwhelmed, like how many more mandates are we going to be asked to do, and is the state providing us funding to do this? And the answer is no. And yet I think many of us knew that we were already providing safe sleep education already, so the mandate really didn't impact us too much. It just meant signing an extra form. So the objectives of this study were to determine the effectiveness of the current SIDS education at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital Newborn Nursery. We didn't really change our practice once the law was passed, and we just wanted to see how effective we were. And then we also set out to assess knowledge of SIDS risk factors and perceptions of safe sleep recommendations among new mothers. It was a cross-sectional telephone survey. New mothers following hospital discharge from the newborn nursery between April of 2011 and October of 2012. More or less a convenient sample in that when people had time to make the calls, they made the calls. Of course, people were given the opportunity to decline participation, and this was IRB approved. Surveys were conducted at 2 to 4 weeks postpartum, and we assessed knowledge of SIDS risk factors, infant sleep practices, and perceptions of safe sleep recommendations. These are the maternal characteristics. You can see, by and large, they were young women, on average 27 years. We dichotomized race ethnicity just because of sheer numbers, and 75% were non-white. About half were single. And surprisingly, our population was more educated than we had expected, with the majority having over a high school education, but you can see still as many as 38% who had high school or less. About 60% were multiparous, and 55% received medical assistance. 68%, so you can see that there are different cut points for income, but 68% receiving WIC benefits. And on average, they were term babies who were coming from our newborn nursery, and we did not include our ICM. So to start, this slide shows you on the y-axis percentages. On the x-axis, we looked at specific SIDS risk and education. So we asked when education occurred, and you can see that as many as 35% actually received education about safe sleep during the prenatal period, which we were happy to see, although the number could be higher. When we looked at written materials that were provided postpartum, you know, we had hoped for 100% because that was our policy at the time, but it was a little bit over 90%. And then when we asked about whether or not a nurse or doctor had spoken to them specifically about safe sleep during their postpartum stay, almost 90% said yes. And you can see that there are some percentages of no there. We looked at the timing of SIDS risk reduction education, and we asked, the question was really a multiple choice question about timing, early, mid, late pregnancy, or after the baby was born. You can see that the majority said after the baby was born, but when we looked at during pregnancy, it was kind of broken down to almost 3 trimesters, which was very interesting to us. We looked at results specific to knowledge, and this slide, I hope it's not too confusing for you, we did percentages on the y-axis, and on the x-axis, it really breaks down to the yes, the no, and the don't know. But I tried to circle the highlights, so with the back position being the safest, up to 10% said that a non-back sleep position was the safest, so that was either side or prone. When we looked at the risk of choking on the back, you can see that as many as 20% still feel that there's an increased risk of choking when placed on the back sleep position, and that another 20-something percent said don't know. So we have to do more with that kind of messaging. And then when we looked at increased risk of SIDS on a sofa, although the majority said yes, there was an increased risk, you can see that as many as about 13% said no or don't know. We looked specifically at practices, and unlike 10 years ago when hospitals were not modeling the best behavior because the AAP was kind of wishy-washy on the side versus back, but nowadays people have gotten the message, and you can see that 93% of mothers say they use the back sleep position, and another about 97% say the hospital staff also use the back sleep position. When we asked about bed sharing with the newborn, as many as 15% admitted to bed sharing at some point. We looked at some of the characteristics associated with when they received educational materials, and just to summarize the slide in a nutshell, you can see that prenatal education was given largely more to younger women and also to those with lower education. Similarly, when we looked at healthcare provider counseling, it seemed that a greater percentage of those who were high school or less educated said for sure they received the information, whereas less so with the college educated. When we looked at receipt of written materials, the only significant difference we found was that those who had received written materials knew that there was an increased risk associated with pillows in the crib versus those who did not. Otherwise, there was no difference. We looked at prenatal education and healthcare professional counseling, and there was no difference in knowing certain factors. Then we looked at the non-back sleep position as the safest, and we looked at sociodemographic characteristics. And what we found was that people were more likely to be non-white, single, and receiving WIC if they thought that a non-back sleep position was the safest. Similarly, when we looked at concerns about an increased risk of choking with a back sleep position, the highest risk groups were non-white race, single, low education, medical assistance, and WIC. When we looked at awareness of SIDS risk associated with sleeping on the sofa, we found no associated sociodemographic characteristics. And when we looked at bed sharing, surprisingly, we found that older women who were of white race ethnicity and higher education were the ones who were more likely to use bed sharing. We did not look at breastfeeding. I'm sorry to say that is a limitation. But there was no association with marital status parity, insurance, receipt, or WIC. So in conclusion, enhanced efforts must be made to educate non-white race ethnicity, single, low-income mothers about SIDS risk reduction. When teaching about SIDS risk reduction, we need to make increased efforts about talking about safety, concerns about choking when using